You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
A recently published paper titled Equity and Other Effects of a Program Facilitating and Promoting Active Travel investigated the implementation of walking and cycling infrastructure and run programs to promote and normalise active travel. Today I spoke with Dr. Lee Beattie about the results and what we can do with them. I started by asking what material measures we can take in order to increase active transport in Aotearoa.
Well, it's interesting. We were just discussing this as part of a fast forward lecture last night, which the School of Architecture Planning runs, and we were talking about how we tend to invest and where we make our investment in terms of movement strategies. And we tend to invest more in interregional travel opposed to the idea of returning to local and encouraging active travel options and the ability so you don't have to have interregional travel. And what I mean by that is, you know, that we don't break up land uses so that the residential area is over there and the commercial area or the employment area is over there, so you have to travel long distances to do that. So we're trying to return to, and it comes back to the principles of transit-oriented development, where if you go back to a concept put forward by Calthorpe in 1993, building on other work in the past, talks about transit-oriented development, but a key principle of that is employment and residential and civic spaces, so you can live and work and play in a set area, and that's why we talk about pedestrian catchments of 800 metres and such like. So really, really important that we move away from this idea that people have to move and to encourage people to have opportunities. You know, I mean, it is a democracy, so we have to provide choice. But people can have choices so that they can use active travel options because the benefits are incredibly well known in terms of health. But we need to have more stronger land use, urban planning, urban design that encourages or requires, if you like, those types of activities to take place. Because if you don't, you won't get all those active travel options you're talking about because people won't ride their bike to work. If it's, you know, if you're coming from Maungaree to the city, you're not likely to ride your bike to do that type of stuff. So that's where we need to talk about, is that discussion about implementing planning policy to achieve that outcome.
So what does Aotearoa look like as a whole in terms of transport models? Are we a car dominated system, and where does Tamaki Makaurau sit in that picture?
New Zealand is completely a car-dominated society, and conscious decisions throughout the years have done that. And that comes back to when we talk about funding streams. Where do we fund and what do we fund? You know, you look at the recent budget, most of the funding goes towards private vehicle trips and, you know, motorways and roads and such like. And I'm not anti-car. It's getting the right balance in the right space. But we're not investing in the transit, you know, public transport and active travel options the way that we should be. But again, that comes back to our land use choices. You know, why are we allowing subdivisions to take place at the periphery? Because, and we do that because it's actually easier to do than brownfields or infill development. That encourages car-dominated behaviour. And that's the sort of what we've been doing. So what we need to do is fundamentally think about the need to change our approaches, stop urban sprawl, if you like, or development at the periphery, encourage intensification in the right locations, not everywhere, in the right locations where there's infrastructure, there's, you know, public transport that can become viable, and that will lead off to active travel that will come for that. You know, people will start walking more. They'll start taking the bike, they'll take the e-skateboard or whatever the case may be. We need to work at that level. And that's another part about when we talk about climate change. It really frustrates me that we've disconnected land use and urban form from climate change because that's the predominant driver of this. You know, we build cities that last for hundreds and hundreds of years. We've got to be really thinking about where we're building these cities. You know, where is that taking place?
So the research shows that interventions of walking and cycling structures and running programs were associated with sustained increases in travel rates. So what benefits are drawn societally from more people partaking in active travel?
Well, the health benefits are critically well known, and, you know, urban designers like us always work with the health guys because that's one of our trump cards, if you like, in that discussion, is that, you know, well-functioning, well-designed urban spaces where people can walk, can use active travel models, are just incredibly beneficial at multiple levels. You know, I'm not a psychologist, but the evidence will show you that people's psychological well-being is much better if they get out and exercise more. And it's about, again, in providing those options. And that's really what we should be thinking about doing. It's a bit frustrating as the side. The government's just introduced the medium housing density provisions. And I don't know if you know about those, but that's where you can have three houses on every site. I would argue that's probably not the way we should be going. We should be thinking about where we put that density. So there is employment, there is retail, there is open space, there is all those sorts of things. So people can walk to these spaces. So, yeah, totally agree with you. Absolutely critical. Evidence sits behind it, and that's what we need to really start doing in a meaningful way. And in saying that, I mean, Auckland has been doing this. You know, you can see around the city. Since the Auckland Unitary Plan came out in 2016, there has been a high level of more apartment buildings, more intensity, more around train stations, busways. We're trying to do those types of things.
How does this research relate to the contentious Skypath and Tamaki Makaurau? Can we extrapolate and say that that sort of infrastructure will provide these benefits?
You mean the cycleway that was proposed, a $750 million cycle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've got to say to yourself, you know, honestly, what's the benefit, the cost-benefit return to that? You could probably have run a ferry back and forth 24 hours a day for 20 or 30 years on that, probably 100 years, you know, every 30 minutes back and forth for the outcome that you're going to get from that. For me, a better solution to that problem was, well, why don't we use the existing infrastructure that we've got with the Harbour Bridge? And, you know, why didn't we think about, you know, and the original Skypath, don't know if you know, but when it originally went through, it was going to cost us about $21 million. And there's a long story and history behind that. And what happened to that. And it's a shame we didn't give effect to that plan, the original plan, because we probably would have had that connection now. I think for me, as I say, it's better to use the existing infrastructure, and that $750 million could go in transit, could go into public transport. A second harbour crossing, which is based on public transport, would be a better investment of that type of money, to be perfectly honest with you. We could, as I say, use the existing infrastructure. Why do we, you know, have eight lanes on the Harbour Bridge, or why didn't we go for the original Skypath option, which was sitting underneath those lanes, and as I say, originally was about $21 million. Mind you, that was sort of 12 years ago, but that was the plan, and unfortunately we never implemented it. They even actually had consent from the Environment Court to proceed.
Wow, that's interesting to know. I did not know that.
It's an interesting story.
Yeah.
You know, that we could have built this a long time ago. And I don't want to get into the politics, but there's a lot of politics involved in that. NDTA got involved and all sorts of things. But, yeah, if you go back and look at the original Skypath, it was actually considered by the Environment Court because there's lots of appeals from the local residents. And council actually bought sites, or NDTA actually also bought sites to enable it to take place. It didn't go forward with it, which is at the time very, very frustrating because, as I said to you, the $750 million, you know, that's just... It's just not realistic. If you think about the investment spent for the return, you could have done what we've done. And as I said, I'd rather invest that money in a transit system. You know, the idea is eventually that the light rail system that we're hopefully going to proceed with will go on and continue on down through Wynyard Quarter, and that will become part of the system that links to the Northern Busway, because the Northern Busway was designed to take light rail. That's why it's built at the grades it's built at. It's not designed solely for buses, it's designed actually for light rail.
Māori increased active travel rates considerably more than non-Māori, as did members of households with below median income. What kind of factors can produce those differences in population behaviour?
Well, you know, a good Māori colleague once said to me, you know, where are the cycleways going? Who is designing the cycleways and where are the cycleways going? So I think there's an interesting question about where they are going and how we are connecting those things. But also I think it's getting in, and it's just not Māori Pacific, it's all low decile spaces as well. It's thinking about providing them with options. And that comes back to this question about where we put public transport, where do we put these active cycle options and walking options? And there's a lot of discussion in the literature now about, you know, equity in terms of access to public transport. Now, in the question we talk about light rail, and you know, I do support the idea of running it either down Dominion or down Sandringham, and whether it's surface or underground or elevated, those are interesting questions. But, you know, a really interesting question could be asked, would a lover set of investment be linking Manukau to Maungaree? You know, would that be a very good sort of thing? And then leveraging off that with, you know, these transit-oriented developments where we can have opportunities for work, live and play spaces around those, which we then can encourage that type of active options for those communities. So there's a real issue about ensuring that we deliver this in an equitable way. And with this comes the cost of fares. And I do agree with the Mayor that I don't think they should be free, but I think, you know, they should be competitive with the relative of how much people can afford to pay. And if we think about how much it costs to come in from on the train from, you know, Papakura, you know, you can see the impact of one COVID, but then that's been counterbalanced by half-price fares.
To go back to the research again, this research was carried out over 5 years, and obviously this time frame is needed for good science and makes sense in the terms of constraints of construction. But do we need to be moving faster in terms of climate change and implementing infrastructure for future generations and also improving the situation for current generations?
The thing about climate change is, you know, I think that's a really important issue. I think there are other important issues in New Zealand we need to think about, like wilding pines, for instance, has a huge environmental impact in the south. Water quality is a huge issue. Climate change is a huge issue, of course. We need to be moving on all these types of issues. And again, it comes back to that question about urban form. I don't know if you know, but the government is going through a process of changing the urban planning or planning or environmental legislation in New Zealand. It's replacing the Resource Management Act with the Built Environment Act, the Spatial Planning Act, and the Climate Adaptive Act. I would argue that the Climate Adaptive Act should go first. Unfortunately, that's going to go last because that is the most contentious piece of legislation. But it comes back to who pays, how do we deal with mandatory treat, how do we deal with all those sorts of issues, which are very contentious and involve a lot of costs and a lot of issues. But for me, those are the things that should come first because that sets up the proposition again about how we deal with mandatory treat. Who pays, you know? How are communities going to adapt? And those are big fundamental questions that we need to be asking. And very honestly, a lot of the reasons why we're not moving forward on a lot of these things, because it comes back to who pays for this infrastructure. Right. You know, we talk about cycling and walking and transit. Who pays for this? You know, the council can't afford to pay for this. There's a big role for central government. But then central government has so many different other competing needs. And so comes back to what are the priorities for government.
Right.
And for me, introducing legislation that sets out parameters of how we deal with climate change must be a priority. And I would argue very strongly that should come first before the Built Environment Act and the Spatial Planning Act, which are all there as a suite of pieces of legislation to change the RMA.
That was me speaking with Dr. Lee Beattie about active transport's impact on communities and how we can promote better outcomes related to transport.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.